Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Plus R Purist. Today we're joined by the lovely sound of my diesel truck as I drive home for the evening. Today we're going to talk about the future of the equestrian industry. So nothing too heavy, right? There's definitely been some big changes culturally and technique-wise in the equestrian industry recently. There have always been fads that come and go, and some of them have merit and stick around, and some of them don't. However, I think that there's some bigger systemic change happening right now. One of the biggest influences on current training techniques and methods is the existence of the internet and how easy it is for us to share information and documentation of training practices. I think that our ability to share pictures and images of people all over the world has created a more unified concept of what training should and shouldn't look like. Certain areas where maybe less humane training practices were more prominent are no longer able to get away with that type of stuff because it's shared all over the world for everybody to critique. I think this can greatly benefit the horse because people who use less humane tactics can be exposed for that, and hopefully their competitive record will reflect the fact that they're not nice to their horses. I've heard trainers say before that they don't like the cameras in barns. I've heard of barns that require that all smartphones or camera phones be turned off. They only allow professional photographers on certain days, and they're very strict about getting to veto certain images. I've had trainers tell me that training methods don't matter. It doesn't matter if you have to go through the ugly to get to the pretty, that all that matters is the end result of what you take to the show or what you take to competition or what you choose to post online. It doesn't matter what happens behind closed doors in order to get there. And I think that today's society is very much standing up against that mentality, that what happens behind closed doors and the way you get to that end result is absolutely important. I think people are becoming more aware of how to read the horse's body language and know how the horse feels when it's performing. They can identify stress versus calm, relaxation versus anxiety, and they can identify some basic factors of good horsemanship and good horse care, whether a horse is willing or being forced into something, whether the horse is in good physical condition. And I think the sharing of videos and pictures and infographics is allowing people to better understand concepts about carriage and how horses should look when they're being ridden versus how certain ways of riding can be really uncomfortable for the horse. There have already been some pretty big shifts in equestrianism. There's been some legislation passed in regards to certain practices, including soaring, things surrounding Tennessee walking horses and the big lick and certain saddle seat disciplines. There's been more and more regulation put on the racing industry, and I think that all the other competitive industries will follow. We're also seeing a more unified picture of equestrianism. Trainers are able to spread the word of how they work with horses and what they do to a global audience instead of their location. If you live in the US, you can watch trainers from all over the world, from Europe, from Africa, from Australia, and see their methods and hear how they work with horses. Same thing for all those locations. You can interact with people from all over the world, and that allows training methods and ideas and techniques to spread a lot more efficiently and become more global. Aside from the interconnectivity within the equestrian community and how much more connected we've gotten, you also have to consider that people from outside the community have also been able to look at the equestrian community in more depth and detail than ever before. It used to be that you had to go to a barn to see what happens with horses, and now you can just go online and you can see trainers from all over the world and how they treat their horses. And I think it's important to recognize that the people watching this from outside of our community don't understand how horses are trained. They don't understand the history and the psychology that goes into pressure release training and why people escalate, why people use whips and spurs and strong bits, and why we handle horses the way we do. And from an outside perspective, it looks rather harsh. In fact, to a lot of people, it looks downright abusive. There are plenty of people in the world that think that the equestrian industry as a whole should be shut down because they feel that it's cruel to the animals. And I think they're completely wrong. I think the equestrian industry doesn't need to be shut down. We don't need to cancel all competitions. But I do agree that changes need to be made. If you look at animal behavior science as a whole, we've made quite a bit of progress in research and in understanding in the past 50 to 100 years. Behavioral science now has a better understanding of learning theory and how animals learn, and it's being applied to all animals, not just horses, not just dogs, not just cats. There are training communities for every type of animal that humans could possibly interact with. I personally have experience with dogs and rodents and other like small mammals. I obviously have experience with horses, as well as birds and some types of reptiles, including snakes and lizards. When I was in university in Vancouver, I started volunteering at a bird shelter. And before long, I started working there, and I was spending almost all of my time with these birds. I ended up adopting one of the birds, and he's still with me today, and he's fantastic. He's my favorite little pain in the rear end. And what I learned is that birds aren't really meant to be pets, that it's very hard to keep them in a natural way and to get all of their needs met. Especially in like a home environment. They're similar to horses in that they need lots of space and lots of activity and enrichment. And keeping them caged is sort of similar to keeping horses stalled. You can do it, and it's not like the impossible. They can be somewhat healthy, but they're never gonna be as healthy and happy as they would be if they had more freedom to roam and to range. And there are a lot of arguments about how ethical it is to keep them caged. What I also learned was a little bit of history about bird training and the bird training community. I saw that they had a similar pattern to what happened with dog training and other small animal training, where dog training for a while was very centered on dominance and force and punishment-based and being the alpha, similar to how people will interact with horses, with having to establish dominance and know that you're the herd leader or the alpha mare. And it was that way with birds too. There were rules like you can't let your bird sit or perch above your head, that if their head is taller than your head, then they were being dominant over you. There were rules about eye contact. There was this idea that you need to clip their wings to, like, and I'm using air quotes here, to knock them down a peg. And most of this has demonstrated to not only be ineffective in a training capacity, but also to be quite damaging to the birds mentally and emotionally. A similar thing happened with the dog training industry before it did with the bird training industry. Like I said, it was very dominance-based, very punishment-based, and there were elements of pressure release, particularly with leading a dog on a leash or a harness. The concept of leading on a leash or harness is the concept of pressure release. You apply pressure to the leash and they give to that pressure to follow. And ideally it's done very gently without a lot of force or pressure. But there were a lot of trainers that would create escalating pressure in order to force the dog into submission. And when you're working with a dog, they're not as big as a horse, so it's a lot easier. If you have a chihuahua on a collar, like it's not really going anywhere. It can get aggressive, it can be quite vocal in its opinion that it doesn't want to go somewhere. But if you have a 4-pound dog on a string, it doesn't really matter what the dog thinks. You're gonna take that dog wherever you want by just pulling on the string. And when you get into having bigger dogs or stronger dogs, especially more muscular breeds or more strong-willed breeds, then you end up having more trouble with strong-arming them into cooperation. And that's where people would use things like prong collars or chain collars or things that would just escalate that pressure. So even if you pulled a little on the leash, it would be a lot more uncomfortable on the dog, which would ideally get the dog to yield to that pressure more effectively. Now we know that the dog still won't always yield to pressure, and this can definitely heighten their anxiety and enhance any aggression they have because they get fearful, and that can spark aggressive tendencies. But on a lot of dogs, it would work. The same way on a lot of horses, using a stronger bit will work. You can apply, if you're using a curb bit, then you're using amplified pressure. If you apply 2 pounds of pressure on a direct rein snaffle, then your horse will feel 2 pounds of pressure on their mouth. If you use a curb bit that has a shank, it amplifies that pressure by using leverage. And the amplification is the length of the shank divided by the length of the purchase, which is the part from the mouthpiece to where it connects to the headstall. So let's say it has a 1-inch purchase and a 2-inch shank, then it is 2 divided by 1, so it's a multiplier of 2 amplification. So when you pull back on that curb with 2 pounds of pressure, your horse feels 4 pounds of pressure in their mouth. And what that does is it allows the human to use less force in order to enact a larger force on the horse. So you can pull less, but the horse feels more. So you're not having to strong arm the horse into feeling that. You're not having to apply a heavy pressure to communicate with the horse. You can apply a rather light pressure and the horse will feel it as though you are pulling harder or applying more force. And ideally, this will allow the rider to either not have to pull as hard or be able to sit more quietly and not move as much and still have the horse respond as though they were moving more or applying more pressure. Same thing with dogs. We use things that have leverage or things that have more discomfort, maybe a smaller collar that will distribute pressure less than a big flat collar, maybe a collar that has prongs on it. Whatever tool you want to use in order to escalate that pressure and motivate that dog into listening through use of unpleasant stimulus. Now, the dog training industry has changed. It's pretty hard to find an accredited and well-respected dog trainer that encourages the use of prong collars or intense positive punishment or negative reinforcement like pressure release based training. Obviously, there are still some out there, and I would say there are still quite a few who encourage the use of e-collars or shock collars on dogs in specific situations, but for the vast majority of dogs, they will not recommend using anything that will strong arm or use force to get a dog to comply. Instead, they've switched to these positive reinforcement based motivators. So rather than using a prong collar to increase the force, which then motivates the dog to move off that pressure, they'll stick to the softer collar and leash or harness and leash, and they'll apply the same amount of pressure, but now they're gonna couple the release with a treat. And typically that treat is enough to motivate the dog to want to cooperate. If the dog is going to earn a treat for giving to pressure, then the dog will want to give to pressure. And then the more positive associations you make, or I should say pleasant associations that you make with the pressure release technique, the more the dog is compliant and the more the dog is focused. Many people will also teach the dog to move off of body language so that the collar and leash is a secondary mechanism to keep them safe and keep them nearby in the event that they break from that body language communication. Taking this over into the horse world, let's look at the use of halters and, I want to say the word leashes, but lead rope, that is the word. This is why I can't talk about multiple animals at one time. So let's talk about halters and lead ropes. So when we use a halter and lead rope, the idea is we can apply pressure and the horse will give to it. Ideally, when you're leading a horse, I think most trainers can agree that we either want them to be listening entirely to the pressure of the lead rope to direct their action, or we want them to be focused on our body language and following our body language. Now, if you're wanting the horse to follow exclusively off the pressure of the halter, then you're going to train them to give to the pressure whichever direction it's applied so that you can move them forward, backwards, right, and left off the pull of the lead rope. And most people will also teach some sort of move off of pressure to the right if you're leading on the left, or just away from the handler's body so that way the handler doesn't have to reach underneath the horse's neck to pull it in the opposite direction, and the end result will be a horse that gives to the pressure. Now, in a really young horse, if they're relaxed and they're happy and you give a little wiggle of pressure on a halter, let's say they have the halter on but they don't know how it works or what it's doing, you give a little tiny wiggle, typically they will be confused for a second or two and they might try and lean back into the pressure a little bit. And then within a few seconds, they typically give a small give. It's usually not a large one, but it's a small one. And you release, which is the negative reinforcement, and then they've learned, okay, that's what I do to get that pressure to go away. You continuously do this in increments to shape the behavior from a small release, maybe a movement of the head to a shift of the weight to actual steps, until the horse gets the idea of moving away from that pressure that's being applied to their head with the halter. Now, that example and that training technique that I gave you, which is fairly common, that's a very low pressure release technique. Many trainers will also escalate the pressure in order to teach a horse to follow the halter, arguably more obediently. So typically I see it as more of a shortcut. It's to get a quicker, bigger response out of the horse. And personally, when I'm working with ginormous animals that have the ability to seriously injure me if something goes wrong or they give too big of a response, I'm not looking for a bigger response off the bat. However, you can use things like rope halters in order to teach them. Rope halters will apply more pressure because there is less distribution. So a flat leather halter or a flat nylon halter distributes the pressure along the entire strap, whereas the rope halters distribute the pressure through the smaller curved edge of the rope. Rope halters will usually also have knots in them, particularly on the nose, because those knots create pressure points on the sensitive areas of the face. Even though it's not quite as strong, this action is similar to a prong collar in that it increases the amount of pressure given so that the horse is more likely and more motivated to move off of it. The concept behind using a stud chain or one of the training halters that puts the rope through the noseband is similar. It's the idea of attaching that harsher pressure so that the horse is more motivated to move away from the pressure and more likely to give into it rather than pushing against it. Now, if you're a good trainer, you're probably going to be praising your horse the entire time you're doing this process. You're going to couple that release with some gentle praise, maybe a pat on the neck or some scratches or a rub on the neck or the wither, and that's great. That's good. You're combining it with a positive reinforcer as long as the horse perceives that action as pleasant, which you have to be careful about certain touches because your touch, even if you mean it in a pleasant and comforting way, isn't always pleasant and comforting. A lot of the times pats are rather abrasive, and the same thing with certain horses that are more skittish, they're not going to find a human touch at all comforting or pleasant. So it's important to watch your horse's facial expressions and their body language to make sure they actually appreciate the affection you're giving them and they're not annoyed or uncomfortable with the stimulus and the touching that you're doing. Now, if you're wanting your horse to move off of your body language, typically, you're going to use a similar pressure release technique where you apply pressure when the horse is not following, and then you release the pressure when they do. Most of the time, this needs to be done in a round pen or smaller enclosure, or off of a rope when the horse knows how to give to pressure. The reason for this is because if you apply pressure to the horse and they are unrestrained in a large area, they're likely going to leave the situation and not really care or want anything to do with you. So if you're in a round pen or your horse is on a lead and knows to give to the pressure of the lead and will not run through that pressure and away from you off of the rope, then you can work with them in that smaller enclosure. And even when you apply pressure, eventually, hopefully before too long, they're going to reach the edge of that enclosure. So they can't actually escape the pressure without getting you to stop it somehow. And that's key because the horse needs to get you to stop the pressure in order to get the release. And that way they have to do the behavior that you're asking for in order to get the release. They can't simply escape it by moving away from it and out of the situation. So I've seen a lot of people who use the mechanism of driving the horse from behind, whether it be through free lunging in a round pen or small enclosure, or whether it be through the use of a lead rope swung maybe behind the handler or towards the horse's rear end to act as a pressure and a sort of motivator to say, move your feet. And then when the horse turns their attention to the handler and begins to listen to the handler, then the handler will remove that pressure from the horse and the horse will be, that's the release, that's the reward. And usually that's coupled with another type of mild positive reinforcement, like a pet or a good boy or whatever you might use. So you might be able to see some similarities between how we trained dogs and how we train horses to give to the pressure of walking on some sort of lead, whether it's a leash or a lead rope, using a collar or harness or halter. I think similarly to the dog training community, the horse training community is needing to transition to more positive reinforcement incorporated with their training. A collar and a leash is a great example of something where you need to apply a pressure release training, but you can do it in a really pleasant way. You can add treats into the mix and notice that people don't get aggressive or biting or problematic dogs just because they're training them with treats. You teach the dog to take treats respectfully, and then they do. It's the same thing with horses. You need to teach them to take the treats respectfully, and then you can incorporate treats into your training, such as to train pressure release. And the net effect is a pleasant interaction with pressure release. Obviously, dogs and horses aren't the exact same thing, but I've noticed this trend in more situations than just with dog training. I've noticed this happen with the birds, this transition from a dominance-based training to the current climate, which is very much positive reinforcement-based. It has a lot of emphasis on clicker training and motivating the birds using positive reinforcers such as high-value treats or food items. I've also seen it in reptile groups where reptiles are being clicker trained and being taught to respond to pleasant stimulus rather than being asked to move off of pressure or trying to be strong-armed or forced into compliance. I think it's especially important because birds and reptiles and other small animals like that are all animals that can be relatively easily strong-armed into things. We don't need to use positive reinforcement or clickers to convince a bird that they have to move where we want them. The bird is 400 grams. If the human wants to move the bird from A to B, we're gonna get it done. There's no need to use treats, but we choose to because science has shown us that it's a more ethical way to interact with our animals and it's more pleasant for them. Horses are rather large and powerful creatures. That's one of the things that makes them so useful and so valuable to us. And I think it's important that we recognize that if our training methods rely on strong-arming them into cooperation, in teaching them that when we give pressure, they must comply, we're leaving ourselves rather vulnerable because it's not very difficult for the horse to figure out that even though we might be smarter, we might have access to higher escalating adverse stimulus such as bits and whips and spurs and whatever else we might use, the horse is still stronger. And in most situations, if a horse really wants to, they can get away from the pressure using what most people would consider naughty behaviors or conflict behaviors, whether it be bucking, rearing, kicking, biting, or whatever dangerous behavior they want to put forth. And to think that it doesn't happen or it only happens with unqualified or bad trainers is a little ridiculous. So many horses end up in kill pens and slaughterhouses because they put forth behaviors that people find dangerous. I've seen lots of horses that come through kill pens that are there because people say, oh, that's a dangerous horse, when really the horse is just voicing his opinion and choosing not to cooperate. And as a result, he's now sitting in a kill pen waiting to be shipped to a slaughterhouse. Obviously, there are other factors like overpopulation and irresponsible backyard breeding, but that said, even the horses who are irresponsibly bred or backyard bred, if they do turn out to be rather compliant and are trained rather well, they're more likely to find a home versus a lot of horses who learn to say no to pressure and present those conflict behaviors, and then they end up in unhappy homes, in homes where they are soured or severely or experience severely escalated pressure that borderlines on abuse or crosses that border straight into abuse in order to force them into compliance. I see the equestrian community headed in the same direction as all the other animal behavior communities. We're a little behind schedule here. A lot of the other communities have already transferred over into a more pleasant stimulus-based approach. It doesn't mean cutting out pressure release altogether. There are still going to be times when animals need to be able to give to pressure, and it's natural for animals to experience that type of learning in their environment, and it's natural for us to occasionally use it with them. However, when we're training for sport or training for competition or training for pleasure, then it's important that we make it a pleasant experience for the horse. It's something that we're choosing to do, not something that we have to do or that we need the horse to do. So at the very minimum, we can make sure it's as ethical and humane as we can. Luckily, research has presented us with techniques and methods that we can use to communicate with our horses and train them more humanely. And when I say that, I'm talking about positive reinforcement-based training and clicker training. The internet has made it way easier for positive reinforcement trainers and clicker trainers to make their methods available online. I'm even doing that right now by giving you this podcast. And hopefully, if I can ever get my act together and learn how to properly edit videos, I'll try to get some YouTube videos up for you guys. So the information is out there and it's getting spread and it's reaching the equestrian community as well as people outside of the equestrian community. And it's important to remember that the fate of the sport really is on the line here. There are a lot of people who want the equestrian industry shut down. There are a lot of people who think the industry is just run by abusive people and people who don't care about the horses and are exploiting the horses for their own benefit. And although, yes, those people exist, it's such a minority within the industry. And it's important that we're able to showcase the people who do love and care about the animals. And it's important to recognize how many people love and care about the animals and don't want to be using escalating pressure release in order to train. I'm one of the people who came into the industry and looked around and said, man, I really want to interact with these animals. I want a relationship with a horse, but I don't feel comfortable using whips, using spurs, and using escalating pressure to try and force an animal into submission. And I think I loved the animals enough and I wanted the relationship enough, and maybe I was young enough and impressionable enough that I was willing to sort of bite into some of the cognitive dissonance of, yeah, it's not totally nice, but this is how it's done. This is how it's always been done. This is how the best people do it. Some of the things that have even since been demonstrated as being not totally true. I think there are plenty of other equestrians out there who feel the same way. They aren't totally comfortable with how we treat the horses or what we're doing with the horses or how we're training them, but they don't see any other way to do it, and they want to have a relationship with the animals. They've invested their time, their money, they've invested their emotions, their blood, sweat, and tears into this sport, and they love the sport. And so if this is the price you pay for being involved, they're willing to pay it. And it's important that people in that situation see that there is this other way to communicate with your animal. There's this other way to train them and interact with them that is just as effective, just as efficient, and way more ethical and way more humane. Hopefully, the increase in positive reinforcement and clicker training in horses will also allow more people to come into the sport. Whenever I was coaching pressure release and traditional training, I would have students who would come in interested in learning about horses, wanting to learn how to ride, but were uncomfortable with the techniques that we would use and the escalating pressures we would use. And eventually, they would decide that, oh, maybe I don't want to show because I don't want to push the horse that hard. Maybe I don't want to canter. Maybe I don't want to do this. Maybe I don't want to do that. And eventually they would sort of fade away. They would cancel lessons and they would stop coming, or they would outright tell me, I'm sorry, I'm not comfortable with treating the animals this way. I don't want to participate. And I would tell them everything that I had heard that had gotten me hooked and that was enough for me to say, okay, this is fine. All of the cognitive dissonance related things. And sometimes it would work and they would stick around, and other times they wouldn't. And I feel awful for those people who wouldn't, especially because they had usually gone through other trainers before they got to me. Even when I did traditional training, I was known as being a lot softer on the horses. I would rarely use escalating pressures, and when I did, I was pretty picky about not escalating it past a certain point and respecting when they say no, and most importantly, examining why they say no. Are they in pain? Are they uncomfortable? Are they getting all their needs met? All of those things that go into horse care outside of the training. And so usually other trainers that were more comfortable with escalating pressure or pushing the horses past a certain point or pushing them through the horse saying no would get these students and they would send them my direction. And sometimes when I got those students, they'd be more comfortable with what I do, but other times they would still leave the sport. And hopefully those students might get back into it with a positive reinforcement or clicker-based trainer. And I know some of them are benefiting from it because I'm running a lesson school and I'm getting tons of clients that come to me with all with very similar stories saying, I tried to ride horses, I tried to interact with horses, and I was told that I have to be dominant, I have to be assertive or even aggressive with them, that certain horses had to be ridden with spurs or whips or curb bits or whatever escalating pressure is necessary, that I had to be mean to the horses, and I didn't want to be. And so now they're with me and they're training with me and they're doing great. So I guess getting back to that original point, I think there's a shift going on, this sort of change in the equestrian industry. And I think what happens from here is going to determine the future of the sport. We're seeing more and more big competitions being canceled and we're seeing lower turnout at schooling shows and local shows and less people wanting to participate in the competitive aspects. I think that the competitive aspect of the sport is a really tricky subject to touch on because some serious reform needs to take place. I don't think I've ever met a competitor that didn't agree that some serious ethical reform needed to take place. Now, we all might disagree on exactly what that entails, but most people will agree that people in competition need to treat their horses better, and there needs to be more regulation in order to make that happen. In addition to applying reform to the current competitive venue, we also have the opportunity to create our own competition venues where we use positive reinforcement and pleasant-based training exclusively. I know there are a few clubs that are already starting to do things along these lines. I'm probably going to butcher this list, but I know there's like a Bitless Association. I believe it's based out of Australia, and they have a lot of positive reinforcement and clicker-based competitions that are hosted online and virtually. There are also a few organizations involving horse agility, which is similar to dog agility, but much larger obstacles that fit horses through them. And they use a lot of clicker-based and positive reinforcement-based methods in order to get those horses to compete. And a lot of it is hosted online and virtually to allow people from all over the world to participate. I think these venues are fantastic. It gives people other options and ways to interact and get that competitive experience. However, I definitely don't think it's the same as actual physical shows. I think that virtual shows are great, but there's something about getting out early, trailering your horse, seeing all of the local friends at the shows, competing alongside them, getting to know the people in the community, and interacting with them face to face that is really special about competition. That's one of the reasons that I've put together several show series to host over the summer. I'm hoping for them to be fun, local schooling shows that are more inclusive for positive reinforcement-based trainers. I think that if you have a barn that uses positive reinforcement-based or clicker training, it's really important to try and get somebody or a few somebodies together that can organize and host a show that allows the clicker trainers and the pleasant-based trainers to get their horses out and get together and show off what they've done in a fun, competitive atmosphere in the same way that we usually do or used to do with our typical competition horses that we train traditionally. I think the show experience is a really important part of horseback riding. Obviously, there's tons of fun to be had without competing, and competition should never be the driving factor of why you're interacting with your horse. It should be a part of it. And I love that equestrians call our competitions shows rather than competitions, because it's all about showing what you've done with your horse. You get to show off your training, show off your horse, and it's more about getting out there and showing the world what's going on with horses rather than a purely competitive attitude. That said, I love ribbons as much as the next person, so it's definitely a bonus if ribbons are involved in the shows. So if you have a community locally, or even if you don't have a community, but you have a venue and you have a little bit of social media presence, then I would definitely recommend that you try to get out there and host a get-together or a show or some sort of gathering so that we can make our physical community a lot stronger. I think that just like with all the other animal science communities, and equestrianism as a whole is moving away from the dominance-based and force-based training and moving in a more pleasant direction. Personally, my goal has always been to run an animal rescue rescue. And I never figured it would be an exclusively horse-based rescue. I thought it would be more in the exotic animal realm or something like that. But I really enjoy the horse rescue I'm doing. However, I never really thought I would be running a lesson school. I love horses and I love training horses and I like teaching, but I was never really sure how to make the lesson school work and work for the horses. And I really like what I'm doing now because I think it's really important that I give people an opportunity to come and learn about positive reinforcement and pleasant-based training. And I'm able to do that successfully without pushing any of my horses or having even the biggest, nicest, fanciest horses. I have a herd full of rescue horses, and when people come to take lessons from me, they're getting a lesson from me, but more importantly, they're getting a lesson from their horse. The horses aren't there to teach them how to ride or to teach them how to sit on the back of a horse or do certain movements. The horses are there to be horses. And the student is there to learn how to interact with that horse, how to motivate that horse, and how to communicate with that horse. And the more people we have out there in the positive reinforcement and clicker training world, the more we can get the word out and help influence horses' lives for the better. Whether you're a trainer or a farrier or a vet or a barn owner or a caretaker, whatever your role is, the more you can talk to people and interact with them and build a community and spread the knowledge, the better. So I suppose that's my long-winded take on where I think the equestrian community is headed and what I think is really going on in the equestrian community right now surrounding some of these important points about training and techniques and methods. The most important thing is to make the positive reinforcement community strong, to recognize that the world is watching the equestrian community, that we are more interconnected than we ever have been before within ourselves and within the equestrian community, as well as outside of the equestrian community. And the world is getting less and less tolerant of force-based training methods used towards animals, and something's going to have to give. If we want our sport to survive and our sport to continue on, we're going to need to make some big changes in how we treat the animals that we love and that are at the root and the center of our sport. I know it was a heavier topic today, but I think it needed to be said and it needed to be talked about. And if you have any opinions, feel free to share them with me. You can send me a voice message on the Anchor app, or you can comment on any of my social media pages, or send me a message or an email or whatever you want to do to contact me. I look forward to talking to you guys again next week.
This has been Steph K. Equestrian and the Plus R Purist.